On RSN927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Huey Bowman rides the perfect race, is probably the biggest name jockey with his connection of Winks and what he does in Hong Kong. Gee, it was a good ride.
We heap superlatives on Huey Bowman, don't we, week after week, for the way he partners Winks and just the way he gets the job done.
But if you're right and they all go the traditional route, then what a folly it makes of this $7 million alternative.
It's what Peter Vallandis calls a disruptor. He's putting it on there to try and disrupt the four-day Flemington Carnival.
The temptation, if you own a top-class filly who's going to stay in training until she's five or six, you might say, let's go and win this $7 million race this year and we can come back for the Cox Plate as a five or a six.
Well, and then for the first time in a gazillion years, the Cox Plate isn't the grand final. There's an alternative, and I reckon that sucks.
That's a very mature, we agree to disagree. It doesn't normally happen here on The Verdict.
Well, I wonder how much disagreement will be in the room over the next hour. Gee, it was one thing we can talk about. A stellar weekend of racing. So much to discuss. From Friday night's William Reid Stakes to the five Group 1s at Rose Hill to the Mornington Cup meeting on Saturday as well. And the man who will tell us all, Mickey Lynch from The Age. How are you, Mick?
I'm very good, thank you. And it's always harmonious in here, isn't it?
Shut up, you idiot.
Sea of love, you know. listen, can you feel the vibes coming from my left?
I think Matty might be a little bit touchy this morning because I don't think it was a fortuitous weekend on the punt somehow. Was it a battle on the weekend?
It was a howler. Chapada dragged back through the field. I reckon it should have won. Hang on, I'll just clunk my phone.
You're not alone there, I don't think, Matt.
It's a debt collector.
Slipper liar. I just still reckon it was the best run in the race. I'll tell you one thing aesthetically. I know you were there and the heavy track and they were coming back and it doesn't look heavy when you watch it on TV. They don't kick up a lot of mud and that, so it actually looks...
The jockeys said the same thing. They said when they walked the track, it walked like an improving track in the slow range, but once you get on with the horses and the weight, it was a glue pot.
Yeah.
And that's how you needed to be a genuine wet tracker on Saturday.
I guess what I'm saying is when you watch these great horses in these great races, you still feel that you're not watching a compromise thing because it doesn't look like those are horrible American races where they're kicking up all that mud and stuff.
They weren't kicking it up, but they did finish strung out, you know, exactly. Behind, like Brown's cows. I mean, it wasn't quite a 3-mile chase.
We could have a whiteboard with bullet points and names of horses on and just cherry pick our way through today. That was the sort of race day it was, wasn't it? It was a yes, no, maybe, what happens now sort of thing. The one I loved was Your Sir Mark, his horse, running second.
That was he's eminent. What a great training performance that was. And now, Matt's about to make a statement here because I think he's been half willing this to occur. The Mighty Mare Winks didn't get out of second gear. Unbelievable again. 32 straight, 24 group ones, 4 George
Don't
riders.
Tip me in for an out-the-back comment.
Now, you believe on Queen Elizabeth Stakes Day, her fabulous farewell.
Don't make things up. You know, it's a sensitive issue. I upset people too much with what you say.
Octagonal or Lonro situation.
I just think, I'm not saying she'll get rolled because she just keeps winning and, you know, it's hard to admit. But if he's eminent, bounces off that run, I thought it was an extraordinary run. I thought, in context, it was the run of the day. He's eminent. The way he sort of tore along, sort of fancy free without any regard for sectional splits and conserving energy and things like that. For him to put that margin on that field and to go down fighting, if he can improve off that and thrive...
You have to improve a fair bit.
He's going to give her something to chase down. There's no doubt about that, you know? And I keep thinking of the... what was it? The one that beat Lonro and Grand Army. Intergaze. I think it's not going to be as effortless as and good on it for not being good on it for being there being a new horse on the scene for her to chase down. I like the fact that it's not going to be a cinch because I'm getting a bit ready for the next era now of competition. You know where races are decided and results are shuffled around and there's short half heads and stuff.
I think it'll probably be more exciting competitive racing because you don't know what the result is going to be. But I mean, I don't mind the fact that this is going to be her last run. I would have loved to have seen her have a crack at five Cox Plates because there's no doubt in the world she would win it if she turns up and returns in the form that she is in right now. No horse can get near her. But Matt's saying that he's finding it monotonous. Mm. Are you in that boat?
No, I'm not. But I find it quite astonishing that they are actually going to retire her. I mean, from what I'm reading, the sectional split she did, the fastest meet of the whole meeting, 1,000, 600, 400, 200. She seems to be racing as well or better than ever. She's all right, she'll be eight next year, Australian time. But she's a mare. She's just bringing so much pleasure, and she can't. And she can just keep winning money if that's what they're interested in. I would love to see them keep her in training and say, we've climbed every possible mountain in Australia. Now we are going to take on the world. Imagine if she could go as an eight-year-old mare and beat Enable and all these top crack European horses. What a statement it would make about Australian racing.
But it's just, you're not showing enough respect for the integrity of the way we look after the horse and all that sort of stuff. And I know you're going to talk about the BHA thing and the jumps and the overreaction and that. And I respect your sporting stance on those things. But yet, with a champion horse, I don't think you can ever be seen to be going back to the well too often. And Chris Waller's aware of that too.
I think that's the main reason they are pulling the pin right now. The pressure, the public pressure, the scrutiny that they are under. And it is, for them, it is a perfect stage to have a well-publicised, choreographed exit where you'll get hopefully 50,000 to the track. I know it is Sydney, and it will be front and centre on all media. This is her farewell. Imagine if they came back and the unthinkable happened. She hurt herself. Those connections and Chris Waller would be absolutely pilloried by everyone saying, how greedy are you? Why do you go back to the world?
And that's a reasonable fear for them, for that perception. I mean, everyone's horse is an extension of, a reflection of themselves in some ways.
She could hurt herself out in the paddock when she's
but that's
spelling,
but that's not that's not the overwhelming perception view.
No, but going back to your point about Emin, I'd be very surprised and hugely disappointed if he could get nearer. I mean, this was a horse who they thought had been retired. He ran last of five, I think, at Goodwood last year. He looked as if he had a heart complaint or something. Now, Sir Mark Todd has clearly done a great rejuvenatory job on him, and he ran fantastically well, very freely.
Is it like a silent J there? The
rejuvenating.
Become a silent
whatever.
J-man.
Possibly.
I didn't know what the word was.
I mean, he ran like a lot of the Frankels run. Incredibly free going, wasn't he? You know, and you just think, if he sets a tempo like that, she can just sit behind it, pick it up and go.
Well, all I'm saying is he's going to give us something to chase down, and we're going to see her in full flight.
Yeah, but Happy Clapper did. Is he a better horse than Happy Clapper? I would not think so on anything
that's
the form
he's
shown.
All I'm saying is there's a new player. I'm just saying that there's a new horse for her to chase down. That's what I'm saying.
Look, to be honest,
but they will be and they know it, Michael. Like, it's like when Maccabi Diva went out on top as well. You've got to be seen to be absolutely looking after the best interests of the horse.
And
you have to be.
And that's why they've made the call.
Especially the greatest horse of all time. It's not somebody 13-year-old steeplechaser. You want to race steeplechasers till they're 19.
Some of them are amongst the greatest horses of all time. I give you Desert Orchid.
Well, I think they're actually looking forward to her retirement, to be honest. I think the pressure's getting to them all. So, and that winning streak now is something that they want to keep protected. And I think we should savour every moment we see her. I know, Matty, you thought it was a bit boring, but just the
you
way
are
she's
shocking
winning.
For doing that. All I'm saying is I'm ready for the next era now. All we've had this beautiful era of staring at the Mona Lisa, and now we can get back to competitive racing, which
we
is what
get
makes
back to
our
staring at some pretty average paintings. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, okay. Well, you talk to Mr. Trinder about his average painting and Mr. Tiakau Shark and Mr. Arcadia Queen about their average painting.
Do you know, though, you can look at the Mona Lisa and then move to the next gallery and look at a Cezanne or a Matisse
Correct.
Or a Picasso.
Exactly.
So,
a Degas.
A Degas, yeah. There are sort of alternatives.
When it comes to art. I'm uncultured, as Matt likes to tell me.
Cultural desert.
What Sounds about like a horse, that. Cultural desert.
That's a good name for a horse.
After Felgate.
What about
that could be its stable name.
The Golden Slipper. Overall, I asked the question of Vincox, and it's hard to make the call now. You're only guessing. But in 12 months' time, we're going to look back and say, it was on a heavy track. Is this a good crop of two-year-olds, or is it an average lot?
You know, the Slipper reminds me of the Miracle Mile. You know, the Miracle Mile, you get all the big build-up and all that, and then the race itself can be sort of over in an instant. I sort of found that with the Slipper on Saturday. Like, just when you thought you were getting your head around who was where and all that sort of stuff, they straighten up and this thing's four in front and the race is over. For the race, it sort of defines the way we do racing in this part of the world. It's a short attention span race, isn't it?
You know? I don't think she's going to be the best thing to come out of the race.
But I thought Maya was the best run.
Given a heavy eight, wasn't it, Michael? Mm. I mean, you know, you have to at least put a question mark against the entire race, and we won't know for 6 months, maybe until the end of next spring, which of these, or whether it's a good race or not.
There's more a story about the Blue Army and the scale of the operation and the success of doing it and all that. I think it wasn't merely about the horses as individuals. It was about the fact they had that army of runners and they came out with the trifecta.
I reckon they had, what, 5-6 in there? Mm-hmm. And I suspect, you know, on any given day, different track, another one would have won, different barriers. Well, she came from the widest alley of all, so that was a great result for her. But on any given day, different circumstances, different runs, perhaps different track. And any one of the other ones might have won.
Well, they had first, second, third Microphone, who was their number one seed, finished second on Liar, as Matty said, was an outstanding run. Then they finished 12th, Pinsec, 14th, Exhilarates, and 15th, Ten Lee, who was the favoured of those. And Ten Lee didn't go a yard. Yes, another one who actually ran really well.
He made a lot of ground at the end, didn't
couldn't
he?
Couldn't keep up, couldn't go a yard. Probably, who knows, maybe even looking for further. But I think there's going to be a lot of question marks. I thought Loving Gabby was enormous. So I think it's a wait and see with the format of that, purely because of the heavy track. And don't forget Tessort didn't even go around, who was their number one seed.
And just because it was the number one grand final race doesn't mean all the best two-year-olds were there. There was one called Shaney Eyre who won last week, and there's Anthony Friedman had a winner at Ballarat. A lot of the time it's circumstances.
Good stable, Anthony Friedman at the moment.
But a lot of the time the horses that end up in the big two-year-old races are there because things went their way.
Well,
doesn't mean they're necessarily the best.
In recent years, the form has stood up. Look at Sunlight last year. Esther Jarb went amiss, we know. Mm. But that form...
Well, Ahud ran second. I don't think she's won a race since, has she? Or did she? Did she win the flight?
She won the flight.
She won a
Group 1.
Yeah, she won a Group 1, the flight stakes. Yeah. But she's run second. Sunlight's run third. Written By ran fourth. He won a couple early in the spring, but he hasn't measured up against the top.
He's a line through him now. But I did write about this on Saturday night, and about the slipper and big wins and all that sort of stuff. And just because you got all the money in the world and all the endless amount of horses and stuff doesn't mean it's any less special when you pull it off. It's, you know, Godolphin's attempts to win the Melbourne Cup, they finally did it, and the Golden Slipper. Just because you got the biggest armoury doesn't necessarily mean you're expected to dominate a race. So...
It gives you a really good chance though if you got half the field.
No, that's true, but the elation's still real, isn't it?
I didn't see James immediately after the race, but the vision online that Godolphin put out, and I think Sky Racing put out, it was the first time we've really seen him that animated and vocal after a race.
Because day to day, they're still going to keep these horses up. They're still going to have an attrition rate, and there's still going to be spike temperatures and bruised foot and stuff. So, yeah, I understood that. It was a big accomplishment for them, for sure.
And what about Damien Lane? He's a quiet achiever, isn't he? He's a brilliant jockey. And he just was happy to have a ride for Godolphin, and he ends up winning the slipper.
He's a quiet bloke. He doesn't say an awful lot, and he doesn't do an awful lot of media. He does his talking really out on the track. And he's been a rider who's really come to fruition the last 3 or 4 years, and of all, he did do a lot of riding for Weir. I mean, a lot of his group ones were for Darren Weir. A lot of his numbers came from the Weir stable, but he has seamlessly made that move, while some of the others who rode for Weir are not riding as many winners or getting as many rides. Lane has just gone on as if nothing's happened because everyone else is happy to use him, which is a mark of, I think, his stature within the jockey ranks.
When he came over from WA, he almost gave it away before he made it. He was homesick, and there was an interview with his dad, Michael Lane, who was a former jockey. I think he's a trainer now over in Bunbury, and he was pretty emotional talking about his son's winning the slipper.
Yeah, can you believe it? It's unbelievable. Hard to believe. Yeah, I think he's a great ambassador for WA Racing. Great kid. No, not yet. No doubt he'll ring. That's for sure. That's the sort of kid he is. You know, he, great bloke. That's the main thing. Probably wouldn't be. He'll hold his shit together a bit better than me. So, but yeah, look, unbelievable.
He calls a spade, but it was good to see how moved he was by his son's performance.
And the other one was how moved Anthony Cummings was about his son's performance too. Yes. He was a blubbering mess, Anthony Cummings. So, yeah, no, you know, everything's to scale. You can have a little picnic horse that wins by a short half head and it means the world to you, or you can have a like Self-Sense winning it, you know. And he said, David Broadhead said, that's it doesn't get any better than that for him. Mm. And for Godolphin on a bigger scale, it doesn't get any better for them.
Yeah, so. Well, and, you know, the pressure that James Cummings is under, you know, how long has he been in the job? Is this his second
couple
season?
Of years.
Yeah, you know, and to get that many runners to the world's, and it is the world's richest two-year-old race, the world's greatest two-year-old race, to get half the field in and then to trifecta it. I mean, you know, where does that stand?
Well, Anthony had the third horse.
Oh, sorry. Yes, sorry. Yeah, I forgot.
John O'Shea tried to throw a lot of darts at the race and couldn't pull it off, and they often ran, this isn't a knock on John O'Shea, but James Cummings was coming off a challenging period for that race, for that stable. So
I wonder, where do you think that stands, a Godolphin trifecta in a race like that, say, compared? Aidan O'Brien trifected the Ark. And you
Chris
know,
Wallace there are, trifected Epsoms and Doncasters.
Yeah.
Gay Waterhouse has trifected the Golden Slipper before.
Oh, did she? All right.
God. Ha Ha, Phoenix Park, and I can't remember the third one. Someone
I reckon
SMS
Quinellaing the Melbourne Cup is about the same as trifectoring any other race. So if you can Quinella a
well,
Melbourne
Bart
Cup.
Did it, what, five
I think
times?
Lloyd's done it once or twice, hasn't he?
Quinella the Melbourne Cup.
Well, he did Bart, with rekindling and Johannes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Last year, the year before.
Well, the Blue Army had a good day with Avilius, and there would have been a lot of punters, if they jumped off the wagon, would have been wanting to headbutt the wall on Saturday. It got out to $5.50 Avilius when it was into $1.60 or something like that in the Australian Cup. Again, a nice training performance to get it to bounce back, and that was the real Avilius we saw on Saturday.
Well, I remember the conversation I had with James Cummings 2 days after the Australian Cup, where I said, what are you going to do? You're at a crossroad. Are you going to go on with the horse? He said, I just want to clear away all the clutter. I'm not that interested in what the vets are going to tell me right now. I just want to spend a bit of time one-on-one with the horse and make the trainers call on it. And I'd love to know what that told him, because obviously whatever he saw, he forgave, and the horse came back on track.
He's unbeaten in Sydney, that horse, Avilius, actually. So maybe he does prefer that way of going.
Is he essentially, even though he won on dry tracks, Danny, is he essentially a soft tracker?
Well, he's European, which would intimate that he'd like a little bit of dig out of the ground. He's bipivotal out of a Sunday Silence mare. So,
what's his racetrack performance rather than his pedigree, tell us?
Well, that's his fifth start on a soft track for a second win.
Yeah.
So it doesn't imply that he's
Something had to have sparked improvement anyway.
Now, that was you think the horse that's going to beat Winx in her farewells race, he's eminent.
If he can beat Winx, it will just draw a line through the last 3 years. I mean, this was a horse who couldn't get, really, he was kind of running in the Group 1s, but
in the Derby.
Not even going to revisit that.
Yeah, but the Derby's often not a great race.
He flogged Avilius one day. Over there. Yeah.
Sorry?
Beat Avilius by 5 lengths over there.
How close to Winx do we think Avilius would get if it was a fair dinkum race?
Three lengths?
And she'd be easing down.
No, it'd be a true three-length margin. 3 lengths is a lot at the top level, you know. She beat Ben Battle by, a length and a half, didn't she, too?
She was eased down, and I think
anyway, just for the record, one last time, because the SMS machine's got a consistent theme going. I just said she's going to, that he's invincible, or whatever his name is. He's going to give her something to chase down.
No, he won't. It'll be another cakewalk, and he might run a place, though. He might be on the money there. Nick Egan and also Lilydale Steve, very quick on the Twitter. Ha Ha, Accelerator Red Hannigan. I think Phoenix Park might have finished about fifth. I'm not sure. I think I got the first four. That's all I remember. So that's the trifecta to Gay Waterhouse in the Golden Slipper as well. Now, we're going to take a break in a moment, but before we do, a couple more performances I want to talk about at Rose Hill, and they're probably the two most thrilling races of the day, but as far as performance-wise, where do we rate the Autumn Sun's win in the Rose Hill Guineas? He's a winner. You can't argue with that. Is the hype bigger than the horse's ability these days?
Why don't you start off with your opinion?
I'll say yes.
I think yes.
You think what?
I think the hype is bigger than what his performance is on the track. And I think...
by a margin?
That'll be the last time we see him race again.
I texted John Massaro this morning. He said he's going to talk to his partners, Ollie Coolman and so on. No call on the horse's future yet. I reckon he's a grind. Like, he's obviously a superstar grinder, but he's still a grinder. He's an octagonal. He's not a so you think, is he? You know, and I'm not really sure how ultimately, I know he's got his price tag and all that sort of stuff. I wouldn't say it's a given that he's going to be a megastar at stud, the Autumn Sun.
Well,
he's going to get every chance.
I think he should definitely stay
in training.
I think he should definitely stay in training as a four-year-old and be aimed at 2,000 metres and above and maybe a Caulfield and Melbourne Cups double, because I think that's the sort of distance that he looks as if he's crying out for.
I'd love to see that too. I'd like to see them
really go to a traditional, let's go back to the future, let's make this a proper Aussie champion type horse.
Yeah, because I reckon they package him off to stud now, Falgate, with most people polarised by him now. They're not, that he's not, he wouldn't drift off to stud now and with a red carpet and everyone going, what a wonderful, dazzling colt. He's now sort of, I'd like to see him be a racehorse for a while now and rise to those racehorse challenges.
You know? Somebody made me laugh yesterday. I was talking to them and they said, can you imagine John Mazzara and the owners watching that race at the 600 with Kieran McAvoy pumping, you know, six to the dozen, trying to get him stoked up? It would have been like watching a stockbroker as on Black Monday, as the graphs on all the computers on the share prices were heading south, 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 you know, and finally a little uptick at the end, so the dead cat bounce, as it were.
But doesn't he remind you of Octagonal? I reckon he is the dead set replica of Octagonal. Like, get into him early, scramble home. Good enough to be a fast-finishing two-year-old.
You can't argue about his tenacity and his will to win. Yeah, he's a winner.
His mentality, his character, his tough game, genuine, consistent, all those fantastic attributes you really do want in a stallion. I'd just like to see him. He hasn't really raced outside his own age group ever.
Yeah, and what
he?
A knock there is. You know? Outside of Mystic Journey, what a knock there is on that group. Like, the Caulfield Guineas is now an example of how you can have a Group 1 race in name only and not, you know, in not substance. He flogged a field of camels in that race. He did, let's face it.
Well, Ahud is the only horse in that race you'd say had any substance to her.
Done nothing since. So that was the end of her. The rest of them are all hopeless. He beat a horse who won the New Zealand Derby at 100-1, didn't he? Yeah, and then Chapada ran third and should have won. Chapada should have won.
Arrogant.
Chapada's just...
No, I think Chapada would have made it very, very interesting if he didn't get shuffled back.
Look, I can't take my hat off to John Mazzara and the people around this horse, because they have done a brilliant job in marketing him. And I've said this so many times on this show.
The shooting Bambi line.
Yeah, and the shooting Bambi line was a work of genius, because it created the illusion, whether it's real or illusory, we probably will never know, that he could have beaten Winx. And that was a narrative that took hold all throughout the spring, and it was the summer narrative leading into the autumn. And will we ever see that clash? Probably not.
Definitely not.
Well, he's not going to go against her in the Queen Elizabeth, is he? I would just love to see him stay in training as a four-year-old.
Well, Chris Waller wants that, but I'd love to ask a neutral observer, maybe a breeding expert. Well, we might try and find one in the coming days to try and work out the dollars and cents of it. What a decision to continue racing on could cost in the breeding barn. What would a defeat in the Rose Hill Guineas have cost in the breeding barn? Like, could it be that much? I mean, really?
I don't think so. We've had this debate a lot about if he ran second to Winx now, beating three lengths, I reckon he'd only gain kudos now, wouldn't he? Yeah. Everyone now sees him as a
running
grinder.
Second to Winx is a bit different to being beaten by Arrogant in a Guineas.
Yeah, I reckon if he got beaten three lengths by Winx, people would go, hang on, well, that's a better measure of his class than beating up on the dud class of 2017-18 for the three-year-old.
So
Sunlight's the exception. She's the sprinter, though. So
Mazzara said no decision, going to sit down with Ollie Coolman and work out Hermitage whether he comes back. He's going to be spelled at the moment, and then decision on future to be made sometime this week.
Just a bit of a postscript from the Golden Slipper. Free of debt. Had puncture wounds in both front legs, an ulcer to the eye, got a clot of dirt and all this sort of stuff. He's back at Flemington. He's sort of having a little bit of a rest, and he'll be back to try and target maybe the Caulfield Guineas. But he's another one. You know, gee, they had a big investment from Aquas for a horse that he may just prove to be an okay colt in an okay group. It's a big investment, isn't it?
Yeah, but nowadays these are not actually racehorses. They're an asset class. They're being purchased as assets, not racehorses. And while it's great for the people who you know, make money out of them as a business venture, it's kind of detrimental to those of us who like sport and the idea of a sporting contest.
just wrapping up the Golden Slipper card, we'll take a break, come back and have a look at Mornington and the Friday night meeting and a few other issues. Maddie's going to pay tribute to Mick Burles as well, who sadly passed away yesterday. But the other feature on the day was the Galaxy, and he did what so many have been waiting for him to do for so long, Nature's Strip. He got his Group 1. Did you think he'd won? Or did you think it was a dead heat?
I didn't even think he'd won after I saw the photo, but then someone said, you've got to really home in on it. And then you look closer at it, there's that black strip across Parada's nose, which makes his nose look bigger. So I'm sure the photo proved that Nature's Strip won.
It's like that red Cadeau Dunedin photo, isn't it? I mean, if it's that close, give it as a dead heat. I was on Parada, so obviously I'm...
I thought it was a massive win. I thought his detractors were put in their place a bit, because I reckon it's so hard to run on a heavy eight to virtually bolt all the way and then go back to the part of the track where you sort of can't win at that stage of the day and hold off Parada. I think it proved what an amazing horse he really is, Nature Strip, as just a fast beast. He is a fast beast,
and there are very few horses that are like that.
And he's an incredible sprinter, but he's not necessarily the best sprinter.
You'd have thought the bog track would have really counted against him.
Well, he loves the wet,
but he loves it. So you know,
then the training performance of Chris Waller to get him back from that disappointing run in the Oakley Plate was magnificent as well. Have we had the changing of the guard? Is Redzel gone?
He's Gonski, isn't he? I couldn't forgive that. I've been his biggest fan, and I just couldn't see any way he was under pressure from the 500.
Well, given that he was supposed to be, after Winks, the next best wet tracker in the country, it wasn't the run of the next best wet tracker, was it?
You know? No, but I wonder where Nature Strip goes from here, because if we're looking at the post-Winks era for the horses that'll get us clicking through the turnstiles, he's such an exciting horse, Nature Strip. Whenever he goes around, he's going to make the form guide look a lot more interesting, I reckon, Nature Strip, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think he's an excitement machine. We want horses like that to get out and
bit of irony, wasn't it, that Damien Lane's been his regular rider, not taken off this time, McDonald put on, and then Lane gets the biggest bicky of all on a spare ride on a Godolphin outsider.
I think he would have felt a lot better that the Golden Slipper was a race before the Galaxy if the Galaxy was run before the
Just
Slipper.
A quick on the K-Mac stewards inquiry.
What do you make of his ride? Because it was on, there's no doubt it should have won, on one of the short price favourites of the day, Classic Legend, who was enormous. Oh, no punters were blowing up. Oh, I think he was just a victim of circumstances, wasn't he?
I don't think punters get
it half
the time.
Should he have tried to press harder to try and cross him and leave?
And then he guts himself and collapses and runs third anyway. So I reckon he held his line. The better ground is always three and four off the fence. He copped his medicine early and just said, oh, these things are going to keep booting up. I don't want to waste that energy. I'd rather get into a nice rhythm. And he almost won. I thought it was a great ride, given the circumstances changed in an instant.
I think, you know, we have to... I mean, this bloke is one of the best in the world, Kieran McAvoy, isn't he? You know, he's won big races everywhere. I sometimes just think they make decisions split second. He kicked up. They all kicked up under him. I think he just felt keep rolling in rhythm, perhaps, and not take a pull, not disappoint the horse, and try and go from there. He's not been beaten far. It's cost the punters, obviously, but circumstances of the race.
He was a big run, Classic Legend. I think he's headed to Hong Kong as well, so he's one that we're going to lose from the Aussie shores. We're going to take a break. If you want to SMS us, there are so many coming through. I'm going to get to them after the break. 0416 90 50 52. We'll come back. We'll look at the Mornington Cup meeting. I want to ask about the Mornington Cup. The depth, is it up to scratch for a race that is a free entry into the Caulfield Cup and good prize money? Why aren't more horses targeting the race? We'll also talk about the Valley on Friday night and lots of other issues in the world of racing.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Keep your SMSs coming through 0416 90 50 52. Got a few here. Guys, give the Rosehill Guineas some credit. Some of the greats of the turf have won it and no one cares about who they beat. That's from Stephen St Kilda. I don't think we're potting the race. I'm just saying that I don't think the Autumn Sun's as good as what we thought he was. The Autumn Sun is emblematic of what is wrong with Australian racing. Everything is put on for the breeding industry. The tail is wagging the dog. That's from Hariba. Tassie form's looking better now. Wait until she comes back for her first run. That's from Jeff. Is Australia the only jurisdiction where two-year-old colts and fillies racing against each other in Group 1 races?
In Group 1s, I think they are open to both sexes, but in, say, Britain and Ireland, they often will have a Colts equivalent of the fillies race. So there'll be a Group 1 six furlong, like at Newmarket, the Cheveley Park Stakes is for the fillies and the Middle Park Stakes is for the Colts. They're both Group 1s over six furlongs on the same weekend.
How bizarre when you think that the fillies, you know, in every way in racing, it's there's no distinction between fillies and Colts competing against each other. How draconian. Imagine if we had a golden slipper only for the Colts. What makes it wonderful is it's the fillies versus the Colts.
Yeah, they do race against each other in nursery handicaps, Colts and fillies, all the time, but they're not group races. Mm.
But the grand final should be which is the best, whether it's male or female.
Well, I think a filly could run in the Colts race if they wanted. A colt obviously couldn't run in the fillies race, but the fillies could go. But why would they when they get the same status? Yeah, status.
Well, that's the breeding tail wagging the dog. It's not a competition, this has been going on
for nigh on 200 years, I think, in those races.
Other SMSs coming through. I agree with you, Lynchy. Winx should go overseas and prove to the world that our horses can be the best. That's from Ted. I find Matt's stupidity monotonous. monotonous. But this
well, you reckon
is,
you find it monotonous? Right, I've got to live it.
It's actually...
Boom.
Matt Stewart, he couldn't pick a winner if his life depended on it, declaring Winx is in trouble. Please. That's from
I
Michael
didn't say that, and you know I didn't say that, Michael. You said that.
Manuel wasn't that long ago. You did get Manuel up at 71 in the CFR. So keep your SMSs coming through. Now, Matty, you were at lovely Mornington on Saturday.
Yep.
Picturesque Mornington for the Cup meeting. Great story, self-sense, but I'm concerned about the quality of the race and the winners. Last year we had Kingsville Dream, who was the favourite for the Caulfield Cup. Previously, we've had other... I think it's the second hurdler that's won the race, if you want to talk about it.
Tuscan Fire? That's right.
It's a free entry to the Caulfield Cup. It's worth $350,000. Why aren't we getting better quality of horses in the race?
It's kind of almost like a slow evolution for people to get a handle on this race as a lead-up, and we've got to improve the quality of our stayers. That's sort of going to take years and years if it ever happens at all. So the Overseas Raiders come much later than the Mornington race. They're not going to come earlier. They represent the strength in the race, really, these days, don't they? So
Was it so terrible? I mean, you had a Group 1 winner topping the weights. You had a horse that ran
second. The only reason Trap the Falls went there was because Gerard McLean couldn't run him in Sydney.
Yeah, okay, but he went there. Ventura Storm had run second in the Group 1. English St. Ledger as a three-year-old.
Was it 20 years ago?
Stars of Caram had run second in a Derby.
Tarquin. Well, Cinderwin, High Bridge, Gardini.
They were off bottom weight. Look, I'm not saying it was the greatest ever race, but I think the point Matt's made, it is an evolutionary thing. It's only been happening a few years. I actually think it shows you that a lot of people perhaps aren't thinking far enough ahead. If you're smart and shrewd, you would lay one out, and like Weir did with the horse that won last year.
Kingsville Dream. I respect what they're doing, because we can't have the argument of, oh, well, you know, the overseas horses are going to dominate and we're not doing anything about it. The MRC is
I think the idea is great. I'm just wondering why we're not getting better.
It's maybe a victim of the timing, isn't it? That it's clashing now with the staying group races in Sydney. But that would be a better reason, perhaps, to rather than go and run third in a Mannion Cup or second, why wouldn't you come and win this and get your free ticket into the Caulfield Cup?
Isn't the answer that we don't have good staying horses? If you put on a staying race to qualify horses for a Caulfield Cup at this time of year, without the strong internationals coming, we're left with a local group of stayers, and we all know they're no good.
Was it last year or the year before, did Charlie Appleby bring out a horse for this race?
Yeah, and he broke his shoulder or something.
I hope that we'd see a bit more of that with those internationals who want the easy ticket in that maybe on the way up or something.
I just think best judged maybe in five more years' time. It's going to take a bit of time, and then you will get your James Cummings, for instance, when he gets more of these Avilliuses and that, at some point in the next couple of years, he's going to go, right, here's this horse. He's going to go down there for that. And, you know, some of the other big stables, David Hayes will find the right horse in the next couple of years.
But we don't know.
It's only one of 18 places.
Self-sense is, but he's a great advert for that race. He's a top-class hurdler, and he's a good-class stayer on the flat. You know, he's won no end of country cups and metropolitan races. And I love him because he's a throwback in a way. I mean, I grew up in Britain where there is a very strong tradition of these dual-purpose horses. particularly in Ireland, actually, where they're rattling good hurdlers, 2 mile, you know, champion hurdle type class hurdlers who can kick up and win at group level on the flat and over 2 miles, you know, and we used to see it here. Darren Weir had that very good one, Gotta Take Care. Michael was talking off air about Sharpaz when he was a kid, remembers that. And I'd like to see more of that coming back.
But that's the other thing too, is the Caulfield Cup is not the All-Star Mile. So the Caulfield Cup is a handicap that is still built in some way on dreams and long shots and horses in at the handicap. And what's wrong with one of the 18 horses being a jumper slash country cups horse who happens to win that, who's not going to win the Caulfield Cup but is going to go in with a weight that gives him at least a fleeting hope? So if we still believe in the Caulfield Cup as a dreamer's race and a handicap, then why can't you have these horses representing one spot?
I'll tell
of
you what, if Self-Sense runs, I bet he finishes in the first half, because you'll
in the Caulfield Cup.
I reckon he'll finish in the first nine, because he'll stay the trip. And a lot of them might not.
2,400.
But I don't reckon the Caulfield Cup should be about...
A lot of them won't get
it
properly.
It's not the Melbourne Cup.
No, a lot of them still won't get it
properly.
But
does the Caulfield Cup have to be about attracting the absolute best field every year? Or is it a bigger race than that? It's an institution, it's for the public and
all
that?
It's a quality handicap now, because the best horses, if you struggle to get in.
Yeah, but if one of those 18 is a horse like Self-Sense, does it matter?
Oh, no, I don't have a concern with it. I don't think he'll be competitive in a Caulfield Cup. I think he's
But most
great
of the
horse.
Horses aren't competitive.
I don't know. Look, his rating was 99 going into that. That'll lift him up another, 3 points?
When's the last time we've had a Gallywood winner in a Caulfield Cup?
I don't know.
He's a 200-to-1 shot in a Caulfield Cup any day of the week.
He's not going to win it, but I think there's a place for a horse
him. But I agree with that. It's a Caulfield Cup. It's not meant to be a Cox Plate.
No, I don't mind him running. I'm just saying I'd like to see a better standard of race.
But my point is, his rating will go up to about 102, 103. That is on a par with those horses down that do get in the Caulfield Cup down near the bottom
of
the
weights. Yeah, but you're judging their chances on their ratings, which is flimsy.
Yeah, but the ratings are what determines whether they get in or not.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't determine how good they are on the day and which ones are improving and which ones are stagnant.
What do you make of Hangman?
He's a hit and missman, isn't he?
I
think Mornings is a funny track too. That's the other thing about that meeting for some horses. Very short run home, a tricky sort of a track geographically. So a lot of horses that have been running well on the big city tracks wouldn't necessarily have handled Mornington.
Well, Matt from Vermont saying, can you please rate Patrick Maloney's ride on the heavily backed favourite in the Mornington Cup? Did you have any issues with Pat Maloney's ride?
Not really. I just think it was the way the race panned out. It was sort of over. You had to get right into the race early. If you're out the back like Hangman was, your chances were shot pretty early, but you can't reinvent the way to ride him.
Best win of the day, horse to follow out of the race, Mr. Quickie. Jeez,
Mr.
a good horse.
Quickie, yeah. Just going back to Hangman, though, Hangman was an example of what they're hoping the Mornington Cup will become, because when he won at Flemington, Mike Moroney very quickly said, no, we're not going anywhere near Sydney. We're going to the Mornington Cup. We want to get this horse in the Caulfield Cup. And that's what they want. They actually want a field of Hangmans that run a bit better than Hangman did.
That's true. Yeah.
Just quickly, Friday night at the Valley, Sunlight. Unfortunately, we lost Shoals pre-race. Is she now the best sprinter in Australia?
Well, I was talking to the Perth guys about it before. She's won a Magic Millions, a Coolmore beating the Colts. She's won a Newmarket, the best Newmarket in 20 years, and now she's won a William Reid. If you take Black Caviar out of the discussion of female sprinters, I reckon she's the best sprinting filly of the last 20 years, isn't she, if you look at her record?
She's like special.
Yeah, 3-year-old filly. I mean, when was the last one that won the Newmarket before her? Special one? I don't know, you know.
Oh, Newmarket? I don't know. You remember the year we had Paclani with me? They trifecta the Oakley Plate.
Yeah.
Childhood memories for Felgate.
they're always the... Just before you go on, though, you raised the point, Mr. Quickie. I think you're absolutely right. He looks like a rattling good one in the making, doesn't he? He won at Flemington the day of the fires when Philip Stokes had to rush away back to Pakenham to make sure his stable hadn't burned down. And then he said he was going to go for the SA Derby, I think. So it'll be back to the future for Stokes. And he looks like you take a lot of beating there.
And just a quick one on too, on Friday night. Shocking scenes and shocking luck for the connections of Voodoo Lad, who sadly had to be put down after he broke his leg right in front of the winning post and the crowd on the night. And Ben Mellum also... unfortunately, has a very bad break of his wrist. He tweeted yesterday, I'd like to thank everyone for their messages of support. Sorry I haven't had a chance to respond. Quite a nasty fracture, but thankfully could have been a lot worse. Thoughts are with connections of Voodoo Lad. So we'll get an update on Benny Mellon when he's okay to speak. But unfortunately for Benny, he's out for a few weeks.
Yeah, I reckon, because I'm always one for don't cover the warts and show things, but that was such a dramatic, sad, tragic scene right at the wrong spot out the front of the winning post. And apparently for those that were there, it was extremely dramatic, the scene. And so I got no issue with that level of drama being edited out. But the only thing I was a bit curious about was .com didn't show the replay of the race, the proper race replay, out of respect for Voodoo Lad, but Voodoo Lad barely appeared in it, and you got to make a decision on what vision sits on the right side of OK and which vision sits on the wrong side of OK, and I think they probably went uber conservative there because there was no harm in showing a replay of the race. You know?
No, I agree with you. I think the race was the race, and you know, the camera didn't pan on Voodoo Lad while the race finish was being fought out with Sunlight leading and Sprite coming from way out the back. You know, that was just the race.
You wanted to see the various things that went right and wrong in the race, and you never did.
We got to take a break. A Lingy was the last filly to win a new market.
Right.
And she was a
I reckon very... she's better than a Lingy. I think she's sharper than a Lingy was.
Yeah, may well be, yeah.
Richo's texting and says the first eight home in the Mannion Cup would have all won the Mornington Cup on Saturday.
Quite possibly.
Oh, well, quite probable, but
we're going to take a break. On the other side of this, Matty Stewart's going to pay tribute to Mick Beals, who sadly passed away yesterday or on Saturday. And we also want to discuss why the Poms hate the Aussies in the world of racing.
The verdict for OTI Racing, where sport and lifestyle collide. Find out more at oti.com.au.
Dunner's forcing his passage on Contributor. He's got him away from the rails. He's about to come with his run, and Bagman next. The cleaner leads by two lengths, though, into the straight from Kenjewit. Dibyani, Contributor, and Bagman coming down the outside. But the cleaner's well clear. He's two lengths in front and too good for them. The cleaner by two lengths to Bagman, Dibyani.
That was the cleaner winning his second Dato Tan Shin Nam Stakes. He was the first Tasmanian to run in a Cox Plate. He was Group 1 placed on a number of occasions, and he was trained for the majority of his career by one of the characters of racing, Mick Beals, who was a caricature of what an old-style trainer would be, a ripping battler of a bloke who sadly passed away on Saturday after a long battle with emphysema.
Well, he'd had emphysema his whole life. He was born into a family of emphysema-riddled kids. He was one of 12 or 14 kids, you know, and so that's the sort of hardship he grew up under. And I've written something for the website about it, and the point I was trying to get across is when the dominators don't win everything, you get these little stories that come out of Trinder, for instance, is the latest one with the Mystic Journey, Vic Rail, Vaux Rogue, Joe Janiak, Takeover Target, and Mick Beals fitted nicely into that group. He was a amazing sort of character. He looked like he'd been run over by a truck. He was weather beaten, you know, and he lived in what's called a donger, which was which is an old shipping container at the stables at Longford. He had this horse he bought because he wanted a friend, because his wife Lynn had died of emphysema about 10 years earlier, and he basically just wanted a companion, and he bought this thing that he said was goose-arsed because it had a pointy bum on it and had nothing else going for it. And Mick and the cleaner became this gruff, sort of rough champion story of two, the champion story of Mick's life story and the cleaner. And they, when he became so famous in Longford that the last two Cox Plate campaigns, they had a town parade, like something out of the 1850s, not the 2000s.
And how did he get his name, the cleaner?
Because one of the part owners had a particularly attractive cleaner who cleaned the house. And even the syndicate that owned the horse, you know, this isn't like a Godolphin syndicate a Coolmore syndicate. This is, they're all teeing up on the first tee at Royal Longford, and Beals has gone off, paid 10 grand for this goose-assed horse, and anyone want to go in? And there's this bloke with a stringy beard who put in pumps for a living. He said, oh, if I sell a pump tomorrow, I'll go on the horse. And sure enough, he did. And he used to cross Bass Strait and come over here, and Mick had in his donger, which I feel funny saying all the time, but anyway, he had an oxygen...
a bottle.
Bottle, yeah. And nothing else. He had a black Johnny Cash suit with a a pale blue tie, which was the cleaner's colours, and the only things he had on the walls were pictures of the cleaner, and he looked out the window and saw the horse, and it just became one of those, for as long as the horse's career lasted, we were exposed to Mick Burles and the cleaner, and then they move on, and well, you hope to find another character, but that was the sort of guy he was.
But that's what makes racing great, and it's, you know, what we need to not necessarily cling on to, but promote and develop and find, and let's always hope there is room for these stories.
And you know they're going to be fleeting, because you know he's only ever going to get one, the cleaner, and Vic Rail was only ever going to get one, Vogue, so they are only as long as the shelf life is as long as the shelf life of the horse.
And apparently his dying wish is that he wants to be buried with the cleaner. He wants to be buried next to his mate, the cleaner, as well. So yeah. He was the love of his life, the cleaner, and he'll be sadly missed. But he made an indelible mark on the racing scene here. Just speaking of a lovely little story too on Friday night, the Princess Jenny story, Rich, I did a lovely interview with the owners there. And then Consensus, we should have copped the Omen Tip winning the Sunline Stakes. Now, I think that Trevor McKee is not in the best of health as well. So it was a nice special moment for the McKees to win that race at the Valley on Saturday, on Friday night as well.
And Trevor's one of those caricaturable faces as well that a cartoonist would have loved, you know, like Mick Burles. The Omen was there, wasn't it?
I thought it was a good night at the Valley, actually. I mean, it was a good card, pretty strong undercard to the Group 1. Really warm, lovely evening, apart from the Voodoo Lad incident. It was an excellent
night.
Now,
Mick, I want to ask you, is it true that all Poms in racing hate Aussies? Now, why is this? Because quite unbelievable letter, which was sent into the Racing Post from very, very highly respected trainers, Mick Shannon, Henrietta Knight, Charles Edgerton, saying that critical of the British Horse Racing Authority and the chief executive, and accused them of hiring too many Australians who are basically ruining the way racing in the UK is run. Now, what is the story? And are you defending your fellow
Poms? They can't hate them too much because they've given them some very highly profile and presumably highly paid jobs. I mean, Paul Bittar, who's someone we all know, ran British racing
but these
for
trainers,
several years.
The people in the race, they don't make those decisions.
What happened, I think, was after the Cheltenham Festival, which we discussed last week, there were some contentious decisions made about suspending jockeys and the way that races were run. AP McCoy, a legend, a jumped jockey legend, was highly critical. And there is a feeling that they have Australians like the chief, Brant Dunshay and David Syke. Brant Dunshay's taken Jamie Steer's old job there, and Sykes is the vet, and that they don't understand the culture particularly of jumps racing, and that they are sort of very strong thinking, influenced by, if you like, the welfare lobby that's very vocal in this country, anti-jumps racing, and that informs their thinking. So that's what these trainers were writing to the BHA about. Paul Bittar's done a very long interview with Racing Post, and I think he's sort of on the money in a way when he says, look, you know, we understand why you're trying to appease the anti-racing lobby, but really they're a minority. They're never going to agree with you. Perhaps you should spend more time and marketing dollars trying to appeal to your core constituency and the constituency who are at the moment, they don't dislike racing, they're not pro-racing, they're ambivalent. Try and get them on side. And that's essentially, I think, the message Bittar's giving. Do they hate the Aussies? No. But they do think, particularly where jumps is concerned, that they might not kind of get the culture.
The Irish have come on board with a whip restriction.
Whip reduction to 8, like the French, I think, are down to 5. I think that's inevitable. We've discussed
it's
that
many times.
It's a
worldwide movement. Yeah, it's only a matter of time.
Even in America, we saw those pictures of Christophe Soumillon absolutely flogging Thunder Snow at the Breeders' Cup, if you recall. He hit it about 30 times in the last furlong. Even America now is changing. You know, Santa Anita and the Stronachs are outlawing the use of the whip except for guidance and correction. So it is a global trend.
Yeah, I reckon they shouldn't waste too much time trying to appease the far-end groups who are never going to agree with it, because it's all about resources and job description. If you're there to run British racing, and part of that is the Cheltenham Festival, you've got to make sure it fits in with the modern world, but you can't try and appease the far extremists who are never going to agree because you're just wasting your money.
Yeah, there's a common ground here. I mean, Ted Walsh and, you know, if you don't like it, go and watch cartoons. Well, that's not going to solve anything, is it, you know?
No, exactly right. SMS coming through. Agree with your statement, Matty Ree, .com on Friday. They wanted to see the replays. I was at the track, so I didn't get to see the coverage. I'm not sure if they showed any replay at all. But they might be worried about the horse or the jockey, Benny Mellum, as well. Another SMS saying, what about Gator's move to Sky as well from .com? And it's going to be a big loss for .com. There's no doubt about it. He's one of the most loved characters out there, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sky win.
Certainly is, yeah. He's a well-liked and very, very amiable figure who people get behind.
And I'm not sure, maybe a little bit of backroom movement going on there as well, which we'll get to hear more about in the future. Gents, we're out of time. Unfortunately, it is all over. Tomorrow, we're going to have an interesting hour. Maddie, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks because, and I think it's come to a culmination with Heath Connor's decision to pull the pin because he can't make enough money and also the lifestyle. So we're going to have a little bit of a forum tomorrow. You'll be involved. We're going to get Race Victoria's Greg Carpenter, who's in charge of the welfare of most participants. We'll also get John Maloney, who is a long-time trainer, very, very strong on what needs to change and how the trainers' lifestyles need to improve. And also the president of the ATA, Andrew Nichols. So that'll be after 9 o'clock tomorrow as well. And we want all trainers and participants input into that discussion as well. Mickey Lynch, great to see you.
Indeed.
Enjoy the week. And we'll be counting down to another big weekend. It's the Bendigo Golden Mile meeting here. $1 million in prize money.
It's a ripper. It's an absolute ripper, that meeting. And looking forward to getting up there next Saturday. And that forum will be good tomorrow because I think it's very topical. So looking forward to tomorrow and counting down to Bendigo.
And we will see you tomorrow from 8:30.